Greetings once again, everyone, and welcome to one of those special Sunday podcasts once again. You know, ever since, I guess it's been about the last 18 months or so, we've tried to introduce you to some CEOs and some mining shares that maybe otherwise you wouldn't have a chance to get to know, get a chance to even have them appear on your radar. We're continuing that effort today with a new guest, someone you probably haven't had a chance to visit with before. His name is Jim Walchuk. Jim is the president and CEO of a company called Zinc One Resources, and it is a great pleasure to get a chance to visit with him. So, Jim, thank you for taking some time today.
Back at you. Thank you very much for having me.
Jim, before we get started, and I really want to ask you about zinc and the industrial metals and some other questions, but tell everybody a little bit about your background and a little bit about Zinc One.
Okay, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of myself. I'm third generation mining. My grandfather basically moved over from the Ukraine back in the 20s and went into the mines in northern Quebec, and then my father followed suit. I was actually born in a mining camp in Nicaragua.
Wow.
So we went from Nicaragua to Quebec to Colombia to Haiti to Ontario to Newfoundland, and we finally settled in the East Coast of Canada, where I went and got my university degree in Halifax, actually, and moved over to Timmins in the mining camp working for Noranda. And while I was in Noranda, it was a unique operation where I had 7 underground operations and 2 open pits. So I basically was allowed to work in just about every engineering field that you can imagine from a mining perspective, from a project engineer to a planning engineer to a chief mining engineer to a ventilation engineer to a development engineer. So all I got a very, very good background. And then I picked up and moved my family to the middle of nowhere in Ghana, West Africa. And it was a turnaround situation of a big old mine that they wanted to get ready to put on the block. It was a World Bank kind of operation. We ended up over 5 years turning that whole thing around. And it was sold off to a large South African company called Goldfields. But it was a wonderful experience. And you tend to grow up very quickly. Being a chief mining engineer and nowhere in the middle of an operation like that when you're only 30 years old. So I left there, went back to Timmins in the same area, working for a different company as the manager of engineering and then the manager of operations as well, had a dual role. So I got I moved from the engineering into the operations. From there, I went to head office because I was working with the VP of mining at the time. And then I migrated to another company that had a great project in East Africa, in Tanzania. And it was a Sutton Group, and they asked me to come on as the senior project manager to handle the feasibility study on the project because they wanted to take it into production. So up until this point, I've got about 15 years, 16 years in engineering and operations, and now I moved into the feasibility work. And then we built the mine. We got it started, actually. We did the positive feasibility study. It went very well, and then we were starting the construction when Barrick Gold came in and took us out, and they asked me to stay on as the manager of mining on the operation. And so I took a slight demotion for the opportunity to design something and then to go see it built. That's very rare that anybody has that kind of opportunity. So my wife and I agreed, and we went over to Tanzania. We had built up the operation, saw it. We had about 700 and 800 people working for me. It was a wonderful experience. Tough nut in the middle of nowhere. We did it under budget. We were over on our production targets and our development targets. So it was a very good background and a very good base. And then after that, went back to Canada and got into the junior mining companies as the VP of mining for a little junior. And that migrated into another company in the potash space. This, the junior company that I was with, was gold and uranium. This then migrated into potash. And then this opportunity eventually arrived on my plate. So up to this point, I've got about 36 years of, so I would think, very solid engineering and mining and junior mining experience. And then I joined Zinc One because of the opportunity itself. Zinc One, I knew the people behind the company. They had phoned me up because they had followed my career for the last 8 years when I was with the previous company that I was with called Encanto Potash. We stayed in touch. I left Encanto. They phoned me up a week later saying, listen, let's talk. And they had the concept of putting together a company solely devoted for the development of advanced zinc projects. And that's my wheelhouse. I'm not too much interested in exploration at this point in my career. I like to develop things, build things, get things going. and get cash flow going. And that is my sole focus right now. And my contacts that I've got and amassed throughout my career are also sole focused. I have a lot of people in the exploration field too, mind you, but really I have a lot more engineering contacts that really are really good at building, constructing, and developing mines. So that kind of fit into my wheelhouse. I talked to the people behind it. I really liked what I saw. So our objectives, we sat down and we said, okay, like, I've done Africa. I don't think that's where you want to be. It can be done, but it's a much tougher nut. I said, why don't we look at jurisdictions that are mining friendly, that are north south as opposed to east west with different time zones and things. And so that our initial focus, that's what we did. So we're looking in Canada, some of the states in the U.S., Peru, Chile, places like that. They're mining friendly. You can get things done. You have to be, obviously they have good jurisdictions that have good regulatory things, and that should not bother anybody in our industry. What you really want is certainty of knowing what you're dealing with the regulations, and those are very, very good jurisdictions. So they, you know, you're going to build a world-class operation. You're going to fire all the follow all the environmental rules. You're going to have good corporate governance. You're going to be involved with the community, and you need to do that anywhere. But you don't have to worry about the regulatory system. It's there. It's there for the communities. It's there for the province, the governments, and it's also there for the companies themselves that are trying to build something. So we did that, and then we focused in. We got a project here in northern BC called the Scotia Project. That needs some work. It's high grade, but it needs to have the resource redone again, and that'll happen probably this year. But while we were looking at that, then another opportunity came which really excited us, and that was the Bongara project in northeastern Peru. It's up in the Amazonas. We call it a province. You would call it a state. They call it a district, or department, sorry. I've been down there twice now. I've looked at the project. I've looked at the people on team. The best way that we figured out to get it was to take over the company that had the option on the agreement called Forrester Metals. So we are in the process now of taking over Forrester. I met and have been working with their CEO, a guy named Bill Williams. He's a fabulous guy to work with. He's got a lot of experience, fully fluent in Spanish. He's got a lot of experience in Peru, and he's massed a team down there that I've gone down and worked with. And I brought some of my own people down there to work with them as well. And we're looking at this Bongara project. And if you believe that zinc is a good space to be in, then you definitely have probably tapped into one of the better projects in the world, not just in Peru, but in the world. This project is, I always go back because of my history into comparing things into, if this was a gold project, would it make money? And that's a good way to do things, because I have a very, very good idea about different cost bases on different types of mines, and whether it's an underground mine, what type of mining method you use. It's a surface mine, take into account its location, the infrastructure, what you've got to do. I can do that fairly quickly. I spent all my life doing that. But if you put it into context of a gold mine, it's very simple to see. Is if it's underground, you probably want to have it more high grade. If it's surface, it doesn't have to necessarily have the grade, but it's got to be amenable to sort of bulk tonnage mining and things like that. This sort of has the best of both worlds. It's got a grade that's above 20% zinc. That is absolutely phenomenal. And in perspective, at $1.25, you're looking at something sitting right on surface, grading 20%, that's equivalent to about $560 US right there. That's better than 0.4-0.5% gold, or a 0.5 or 0.0 ounces per ton gold sitting on surface. To put it in perspective, you look at the price of gold as it is right now, $1,200 an ounce. That's an underground grade. You could mine that from an underground perspective, I mean, which is far more difficult, far more higher cost to operate, probably a lot more capex. And this is sitting on surface to be mined.
Yeah.
So I looked at that and I said, that's pretty skookum phenomenal. What's wrong with this project? Other people had it and they've let it go. And when you dig into it, you can understand why they did it. At the time, there was some controversy whether they wanted to put certain equipment at the site. The people that had the project already had a way to put it through their plant, and they were going to use a Welts kiln, which is a long cylindrical tube. Basically, it vaporizes the zinc that goes into it, and then you collect it, and it comes out as a very pure zinc oxide product that then you can sell to smelters. But what these guys did is, because they already had this smelter about 600 kilometers away, they mined it and direct trucked their ore down there 600 kilometers away. And because you're in the Amazonas district, it's still very high humidity. They couldn't get the moisture below 25%. So they were actually trucking 25% of whatever they trucked was actually water. But they were still making money at it down on their plant. And then 2000, so this was 2007, 2008. 2008 then just sort of happened, and the price of zinc dropped out the market, and then they put this thing on hold. The company subsequently then went back to their original business model, which is more into the industrial mineral side of things in Peru. And they let the option lease lapse. And that's when another group picked it up, and Forrester made a deal with them, and now we're taking over Forrester. So we'll have an option on 100% of the project. And we're really, really excited about this. It's been mined before. It's well understood. There's a historical resource already out there, approximately 1.2 million tons. We need to redrill a bunch of holes to test the continuity of those holes, the data, which we're very comfortable with. We're in the process of permitting it already. We're working hand in glove with the Forrester people. They know what we want, and they know what they want to do, and we're in total sync with what we need to get done. We are a very aggressive company, so we're not so much exploring right now as delineating the resource, making sure exactly what it is. We're going to try to expand it so that we have at least 10 years of high-grade zinc that we want to mine. We want to double the production that was done there before. We're looking to put all that into a feasibility study, or at least get a pre-feasibility or a PEA done by the end of the year if we can. If not, it'll be coming out the beginning of next year. And we're excited. We think we can get this thing in production in 24 to 36 months. That's what our goal is right now. Very focused. We have the people. We have the knowledge down in Peru. It's a good jurisdiction. We think we have a fabulous deposit. It needs to be drilled out, and we think that we're going to have that all done by the end of Q3 or beginning of Q4 of this year. So we're pumped. I mean, this is a fabulous opportunity.
Jim, it sounds terrific. It would seem to me the only other question that comes to mind is just the state of the base industrial metals in general, zinc specifically. You know, zinc, as you know, has more than doubled in price in the last 15 or 16 months. But, you know, there's a lot of interest in base and industrial metals these days, especially here in the U.S., after the election of Trump and all of the infrastructure spending that he plans. So if you could, just from your perspective, address what you think of, you know, when you see the zinc market these days. Is it something where prices are going to head even higher? How do you feel in general?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the price doesn't even have to need a head higher for the project that we actually have.
Okay.
It's really good. But a little bit about the background of zinc so that your listeners, I can bring them. If you don't mind, I'll just give a little bit of a Reader's Digest version.
No, please.
A lot of people don't really understand what zinc does. Zinc, obviously, is the third largest industrial mineral that's produced. Most people don't know that. Its primary purpose is to galvanize steel to prevent corrosion. And 50% of all zinc is used for that. Zinc's used in batteries. It's used in paint, plastics. It's rubber products use some of it. Pharmaceuticals use it. Cosmetics use it. It prevents cancer in your sunscreen. It has a whole whack of different uses. But if you want to get down to it realistically, its major consumption is more on the industrial usage. Galvanizing accounts for 47% of it. Die casting counts for another 8. Alloys, it's used in alloys, counts for another 14. And if you're making a brass or bronze, that's another 20%. So ultimately, if you add up the numbers, 89% of it, or approximately, is going in for industrial use. And the other 11% is for the other peripheral things, those paint, plastics, pharmaceuticals, etc. Okay, that's kind of what zinc is used for. So it's if you want to have something that you don't want to have rust out, there is no real, and you're using metal, there's you're very limited to basically zinc, in which to prevent this corrosion. So it has a very specific use, and it's a very good one. And it's if you take a look at the expansions, and we can get into that a little bit of going on, exactly what you're saying about the infrastructure and things that are going to happen in the States. And let's face it, your infrastructure does need some work. And quite frankly, a lot of it in Canada needs work as well. If you go to Toronto, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But also, China is obviously a big user. I think they're, well, let's just talk about that a little bit. China is essentially, to me, maturing like the States matured back in the 1850s or around 1900, where its middle class was so powerful and so large, it didn't really need the rest of the world to generate its own revenue and to use its own products and to do things. I think that's kind of where China is right now. They're still a large, large importer of zinc. And I think that they're going to be a big user. So that's going to stabilize. You're going to have that need for zinc going and the use of zinc in China. But what most people don't really know is that India has also announced that they're building somewhere between, I've heard different reports, somewhere between 9 and 24 mega cities on a corridor between New Delhi and Mumbai. And I've spent quite a bit of time over to in India in my previous job that I had. And yeah, they need a lot of work. So they have proposed, the new Prime Minister Modi has proposed this. And in this corridor, which is approximately, I'd say 1,500 kilometers, they're going to have, they're talking about 24 smart cities, 23 industrial hubs, 6 airports, 2 ports, and this massive 6-lane highway and a high-speed rail transport going through to connecting them all. And they would like to move a lot of their population into these cities. So you're going to have them now needing this material as well. So now you kind of have 3 legs on a stool. You've got China, you've got India, and you have the States going after and rebuilding their infrastructure. So where's all this going to come from? Well, there are lots of producers, but the problem is that a couple of mines, the big mines, have been shut down. I think that's what's triggered the price rise. Mm-hmm. One is the MMG company had the Century mine in Australia, and another one, Vendetta out of Ireland, shut down the Lachine mine. And Glencore has actually suspended about 500,000 tons of production as well for various reasons. And that only was compounded when China shut down 24 of their medium-sized operations due to concerns about the environment. They were heavy polluters with not very good things going into the environment, and they their version of the EPA has basically shut them down and said, clean it up. And you don't clean these things up overnight. It takes a while. So they're not going to be able to reopen those things unless they've made certain commitments, and the population in and around there is not going to allow them to do that as well. That's putting a lot of pressure on the price of zinc, because the smelters are still using it up. I was just going through an interesting report from Deloitte, and that was pretty interesting what they're saying. China stockpiled a whole bunch of zinc concentrate in 2015, and their imports have dropped because of the price increase by 40% in 2016, but they're still producing the same amount of product. So they're drawing down their stockpiles as we speak. That happened. The London Metal Exchange stocks have declined 8% in 2016 to about 428,000. That was at the end of the year. They're down to 428,000 tons as of the end of the year 2016. And they were down to 400,000 tons at the end of January.
Wow.
Now, if you look at it from a global perspective, the stockpiles of things dropped about 88,000 tons year over year in 2016, so that the total throughout the world right now, you're essentially sitting on 1.1 million tons of zinc concentrate that can be used in smelters. That's 29 days of global demand.
Wow.
That's the average over the last 24 is the minimum 42 days. So they're already below the 25-year average right now. It's going down, and there, of course, people want to now start producing, but you know very well, especially if you're in certain jurisdictions in the States and Canada, whatever, or throughout in Europe, it takes a while to permit things, to get them going. And even in Peru, it takes a while because there you have to go through to get an environmental permit. You can't walk in and say, we're going to do everything right. Trust us. They're going to want to know exactly how much rain did you get? How much dust is there? What's the flora? What type of animals? Are there anything that's exotic that we got to protect? All that stuff. And that takes time. You start a baseline, you do all your studies, you go through the things, And it's always good to have a minimum of 12 months, but they prefer 24. That's your starting point. And then you do all your engineering, and then you got to do your analysis. Things happen with the price of metals. It goes up, it goes down. It's not that easy to get something like this in production. And if you look at the last cycle, that was very, very well for a lot of junior companies, but not too many mines actually got constructed. And that's the reason why. We're sitting on a deposit that's well known. It's been permitted before. It was mined before. So we feel that we're in a much, much better position to get this thing up and going and in production in short order. It's more of a brownfields operation than it is a greenfield. And again, it's on our wheelhouse.
Well, it all sounds very exciting and really, really interesting. And I think that's something that everyone that's been listening to us talk is probably scratching their heads and wondering, you know, that's something I want to know more about. Where can folks find more information about Zinc One?
Obviously, go to the website, zincone.com. It's a work in progress because we're a new company, but we keep adding more and more information every day. Obviously, sites like yours, we deeply appreciate helping us get our message out like that. Do their own research, going into different sites about checking out the zinc price and forecasts, and there's lots of information out there. I was citing Deloitte. There are other reports out there that can be very helpful as well. Teck came out with a very interesting report on their site too. So if you take a look at companies that produce zinc, such as Teck Corporation, which is another interesting one, by the way, they have their management discussion and analysis in each one of their annual reports. It's worth reading. And if you just take a look at what they're forecasting, because they have to tell their investors what they think the market's going to do in the short term and medium term. Mm-hmm. For example, basically they are quoting that they're going to produce somewhere between 660 to 680,000 tons in 2017, which is they're a major producer given the total production that the world actually produces. But they're forecasting it going down to somewhere between 580 and 605,000 tons between 2018 and 2020. And that's the main reason of that is, again, one of the largest mines in the world producing zinc is their Red Dog mine in Alaska. And the grades are going down and the hardness of the ore is going up. So it's going to get harder for them to grind. It's going to take more energy to do that. And it's with a lower grade. Again, that doesn't augur well for just propping up and stuffing the stockpiles that should be out there. It's going to take a lot more to do that. So that's the thing you want to dig in, is to take a look at these corporations that are large. They have good people. They do a good analysis. They look at the different people. They quote in their report Wood Mackenzie, who are people that analyze these things as well. Good information.
Yeah,
that's what we look at. We're not looking at so much as people that have an idea. I'd rather see statistics and facts and from reputable firms that actually do that. And it gives me that comfort to know that we're heading in the right direction. I love the idea of zinc and a focused zinc company. I think there are very, very few out there. So anybody who likes this metal and wants to and believes that it's going to go forward, we have a company that is just focused just for that.
You bet. And do you have a symbol for your equity in Toronto or in the States?
We trade on the Venture Exchange.
Yeah.
And it is Z.V.
Gotcha. And I would imagine there's probably a five-letter symbol in the U.S. as well.
There is. I'm just trying to. It's so new. It's a ZZZOF.
I like it.
Oscar Frank.
I like it. Well, I tell you what, Jim, it has been a pleasure to visit with you. I think it's been extremely informative for anybody that's been listening. And again, we've talked about zinc before in these podcasts and the incredible opportunity that seems to be there for a well-managed company that is in the right spot. And Zinc One certainly qualifies in both cases. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I do too.
And everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.